Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. It is Thursday. If you can't keep track at home, it's Thursday, May 7th. Welcome. The phone number, if you want to be a part of the program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Can we just, I got others, and I'll circle back to this, but this thought just hit me out of the gate. Can we stop seeing lectures by people against evangelicals who decided to support President Trump, given that we're seeing Me Too movement feminists say, hey, you know what? I'm going to go with Joe Biden. I believe he's credibly accused by Tara Reid, but I'm going to go with him because we got to stop Trump. It's amazing how they want to continue lecturing evangelicals for siding with Donald Trump, while they themselves want to go for a man who's credibly accused of doing what Donald Trump bragged about in a video, grabbing a woman there. The hypocrisy knows no bounds. But then on the left, you can't really be hypocritical because you're mostly morally relative. And so what's good for you may be bad for someone else. There isn't some sort of standard there. So, of course, hypocrisy only plays out on the right. Nonetheless, we'll get there. There's news there. Man, this New York Times op-ed. But I want to begin with this story down in Brunswick. Ahmaud Arbery being killed. I don't even want to watch the video. I read what happened in the video. This is not a good situation. In fact, I will tell you, I got an email from a listener from Brunswick. He doesn't live down in Brunswick now, but he's from Southeast Georgia, and he is, his name is Greg McMichael. The shooter in the Arbery case is also, is Gregory McMichael. And Greg McMichael and his family are getting death threats and harassment because he shares the same name as the older gentleman who gunned down Ahmaud Arbery. I want to be careful how I tread here because we do need the disclaimer up front. We have seen situations in the past where YouTube video, camera video has shown us something that looked outrageous and it turned out later not to be. And so you need to have that up front. This is the outrage comes based on what happened and also on a YouTube video that corroborates what happened. And we have seen situations like this in the past. And so I want to say that up front to say, I have not watched, I don't like to watch these sorts of videos. I don't want that stuff in my head. But I have talked to plenty of people who saw the video who I respect, including people in law enforcement, and there's just no other way to explain this than what would back in the day be referred to as a lynching. Horrific, horrific stuff. A young black man is jogging down the road, and two men chase him, are yelling at him, begin to shoot at him. There is a scuffle and they kill him. The older gentleman has been in law enforcement and is an investigator now for the district attorney. The district attorney's recused herself. Another district attorney has recused themselves. Someone else recused themselves after staking out the position that this was a citizen's arrest and a lawful use of a citizen's arrest power. Which is a nonsensical situation here. You undermine citizens' arrest statutes by saying, in this case, with this video, I'm going to have to watch it, aren't I? You undermine that situation by using citizens' arrest. Now, for those of you, let me give you the backstory here. There were a series of break-ins in Brunswick, Georgia. An older man and his son saw Ahmaud Arbery, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing his name, Ahmaud Arbery, jogging down the road. The father believed that Arbery was someone he had seen the night before who had his hand down his pants as if he had a gun. They concluded that he was probably the person responsible for the break-ins and wanted to ask him questions. And they began to pursue him as he was jogging. He had a regular routine of jogging, of running. He was not running from anything. He was running as exercise. And the man and his son stopped, tried to stop Arbery. They were armed. They wanted to make a citizen's arrest. They wound up shooting and killing Arbery in a scuffle. You can see in the video Arbery punching, trying to defend himself. There's a shot, another shot. He's wearing a white T-shirt. You can see in the video the shirt begins to be covered in blood as he falls back and dies. Inexcusable. Taking justice like that in your own hands. Believing yourself empowered to do that. And they didn't arrest the guy. One member one prosecutor defended it as the use of a citizen's arrest. Now this young man is dead, and his family wants justice. If you've ever read the book Praying for Sheetrock, you know about the racial problems down in southeast Georgia, McIntosh County, Glynn County, and the like. There is a history down there. I had to read that book. I want to say I read that book in high school and then had to read it again in college. It's actually a very good book, Praying for Sheetrock. But let's not deny that there is still racial injustice in the world. I use this anecdote so much, but you know, Roland Martin, who was at CNN with me for a while, I remember, you know, so I grew up in the Middle East. We didn't have race relation issues in the Middle East. There were one black family in the school with us. Most of the kids were American or European, Canadian, lots of Canadians, Pakistani and Indian. There was one black family. Ultimately, I think there wound up being two black families. And race was something that it didn't really come up. I knew it in the abstract. I mean, been born in Louisiana. I remember distinctly when I was probably 6 years old, we had flown from Amsterdam to Houston on our way back to Louisiana. And I distinctly remember my sisters and me pointing out that there was a black person in the airport. We hadn't seen one we hadn't seen a black person in over a year. And so I'm mindful with myself I have to work on this. It's an abstract issue for me, having grown up in the Middle East. Then to rural Louisiana, I graduated from high school where I was in a class that was majority black, but by then it really wasn't an issue. And coming to Macon, going to school at Mercer, Mercer was, of course, one of the first private schools in the South to integrate. Proudly so. But I'm more and more mindful that there are a lot of friends of mine who don't recognize that there are still problems. Not everyone is racist. And I sometimes think the left tries to weaponize these. I think it's very unhelpful on the left to pursue these claims that somehow Republicans are systematically trying to deny people the right to vote when there's really no evidence of voter suppression any more than there is rampant voter fraud in the country. And both sides try to believe it. And it turns into racial issues inevitably, and it undermines the whole thing. But there are still racial issues in this country. There are still, if you're white in this country, the odds of you getting pulled over by police on the interstate is actually less than if you're black, driving the same car in the same way. That's just a fact. And there's no reason to dispute it, but a lot of people do. They get very defensive of it. It's not to say police are racist or anything like that. It is just a situation in this country that we have to deal with. I have a friend of mine who, when we go anywhere, he prefers me to drive because he says the odds are we're going to get pulled over if he drives. And we get so tribal on these issues that we oftentimes don't recognize it. So this gets me to Roland. I remember where it really hit me as a CNN contributor in 2012. Roland and I were in South Carolina for the Republican debate. We were staying at the big Marriott in downtown Columbia. We'd gone to Charleston for the debate. We drove up to Columbia for another event. We were in the same hotel with Mitt Romney and his family, and Roland and I were doing a live broadcast at a bar in Columbia. He didn't drink, I did. And he was driving, and we were waiting for the car to be pulled up, and these tourists came up. We were both in suits, and they started handing Roland their luggage. Now, they were Asian tourists. They weren't American, but it struck me as, wow. And there have been incidents like this along the way. I distinctly remember being in New York City, standing outside the Hotel Monaco near Chinatown in Washington, D.C., and there was a man out there by me who was trying to hail a cab who was black, and they wouldn't stop for him. And I raised my hand, and they stopped for me, and I gave him my cab, and the cab driver protested. And so I've had these little moments in life where I've seen these sorts of things happen. And there are things I try to be mindful of. Like, for example, the Michigan protesters, the lockdown movement, many of them carrying firearms, rifles. If that was a Black Lives Matter protest in the Michigan Capitol where they were armed, I do think a lot of the people who were commending the protesters for showing up with arms probably wouldn't view it the same way, and they would nuance and try to distinguish and say it was the same, but everybody's got the right to keep and bear arms. And so I see this case down in Southeast Georgia, and frankly, I'm a little bit encouraged by the number of people on the right who are as outraged by it as people on the left. And I got a real concern and fear that people are going to try to capitalize on that and politicize it, and I hope it doesn't get that way. There is, of course, this concern of the rush to judgment. We don't want a rush to judgment, but there needs to be a judgment. Justice does need to be done. And this is a tragic situation. It is nice, though, to see the uniform outrage, an outrage over lack of charges, outrage over lack of arrest, outrage that the district attorney feels this needs to go to a grand jury as opposed to being something that the district attorney himself could oversee an arrest and press charges, but at least the process is working. We can see the flaws of the process, and it's working. We should be outraged over these sorts of things. You know, one of the I had this fantastic class on the prophets in seminary, and the professor's just, he was fantastic, and we spent a good bit of time on Amos, which is really, it's become one of my favorite books in scripture. Man, there's so much in there. And a lot of conservative evangelicals, they try to avoid Amos these days because so many of the social gospel left-wing people who don't really believe the Bible but like to selectively pick from it for their causes, that there's so much in there, and conservative evangelicals, they see the social justice people trying to cite Amos, and they kind of avoid it, but justice is a real thing. And justice is something that all of us should pursue. Justice is not partisan. Justice is blind. Justice is about delivering that which is due for penalty under law. You know, I actually take comfort in the doctrine of hell because there will be people who escape justice in this lifetime who I know won't escape justice in the next lifetime. And it's not up for us to worry about it, but it is up to all of us, I think, to have an obligation to seek justice. And there's a young man who is dead down in Brunswick, Georgia, whose family is seeking justice. And had there not been the outrage, and had there not been the YouTube video, and had there not been national exposure, they might never have gotten justice. And so I would tread carefully on saying people are thus far politicizing, and I have a fear that people will, but I think we also do need to recognize that had the exposure not happened to begin with, there might be no justice in this case. And maybe there is more. And if so, then we have an obligation to get that as well, to avoid the shooter and his son being unfairly besmirched and smeared. It doesn't look like there will be. It looks like it is what it is, and justice is demanded of this. And I'm sure the media will sweep in, and the media will make it all just even more seedy than it needs to be. But I would still keep my eye on the fact that justice needs to be done in situations like this. And it's unfortunate that so many of these cases require media exposure and YouTube videos and national outrage to get justice done. We should all be in search of justice.
News and in-depth analysis from Eric Erickson, live 5 days a week and always online at theresurgent.com.
Hello there. It is Eric Erickson. You know, you're going to need to do this. You're going to need to engage. You need to text ARMY to 33777 because there are a number of things here in Georgia and nationally that conservative activists are going to have to rally for. I'll get to one later in the day here in Georgia. Man, the speaker, the shenanigans that he's up to. First of all, I want to say I got a haircut. If you're watching on the live stream, yes, I finally, hallelujah, got my, I was about to have a mullet. This is just, it's awful. The quarantine hair is, we got quarantine sourdough and not enough people writing about quarantine hair. My wife got clippers and scissors to cut our son's hair. And I was really going to just scalp myself. And she informed me that when she was little, where she lived, that's what all the kids did. All the boys who had lice, that's what their parents did. And so please don't do that. So I didn't. I just let it grow. And it's been driving me crazy. So I was in Atlanta yesterday. And I had to get special permission to go to the office so that I go up. I needed to be in Atlanta anyway for something else and decided I would get my haircut scheduled. And I went in. Corey, my barber, does a good job. I hadn't seen him in 2 months. I've actually been sending money to the barber shop just to help them out. There are several young guys in there who didn't have a big clientele base, and I wanted to help them. And went in, and he was in a mask. Everybody was in a mask. You had to wait outside. And it got cold and started to rain. Who knew we were going to have winter come back? I mean, we've had like 4 winters in Georgia. But I got my hair cut, and that was fantastic. And then I went and was able to see my buddy Chris Burns, and hopefully I'll be able to have him guest host soon so I can take a day off. But nonetheless, I did get my hair cut. A little bit more here on this justice issue. It's sad to see so many of these things get weaponized by both sides in this country right now. We've gotten really so tribal in this country. And I have more and more friends who wonder, can we actually, as a nation, stay united? And what I would really like to say is that we don't have to be except on the core things, and maybe we can't be on the core things. But I'm a big proponent of federalism, and I really do believe that federalism is the cure to what ails us. That if California, I say all the time, it gets me in trouble for saying it, but I'm going to say it again, and people get mad at me again. If California wants to have gay marriage and abortion and Georgia does not, Georgia will eventually breed California out of existence just in population growth, but we should allow them to do that. If Vermont wants to have Bernie Sanders-style socialist medicine and Texas doesn't, Vermont should be able to, as long as Vermont can do it within its means. One of the downsides of this conversation about bailing states out right now is that many of the states that want to be bailed out are states that want to be bailed out for bad decisions they made, not for the burdens of coronavirus. And they're very much behaving like Republicans in the early 2000s. If you'll remember, after 9/11, the Republicans controlled Congress and the White House, and they went on a massive spending binge. And they said, well, it's war spending. If you don't support this spending, you're a traitor to the country. There were Republicans who made that argument. And it wasn't all the war spending was budgeted for. We had the money for the war spending. But we didn't have the money for all the domestic spending they wanted to engage in, with No Child Left Behind and Medicare Part D and the like. And by the way, notice Bush never gets credit for all that stuff anyway. Wanted to be liked by everyone, wanted to build unity, let Ted Kennedy write No Child Left Behind. And he didn't get credit. He's still reviled by some, except in contrast to Trump. There was no limit to the spending. And they hid behind the war. And right now what's happening is there's no limit to the spending and they're hiding behind the virus. And a lot of the spending is necessary. When you shutter someone's business, they're entitled to fair compensation. And that's what PPP is about. That's what the low interest loans are about. That's what the bailouts are about. I don't like it, but these people didn't close on their own. The government made them close. But then you've got states like New York and Illinois that made all sorts of bad decisions when it came to pensions and other things within their state, and they want to bail out for that as well. And Congress should toe the line on that. They shouldn't give them that. And I think Congress is going to cave overall on the issue, and that's really unfortunate. These issues shouldn't be partisan. It's just sad. Hello there. It is Eric Erickson here. Speaking of recipes, yeah, I know I need to get back to them. I'm sorry. I get emails now on a daily basis. Where are the recipes? I've been busy. It's amazing how quarantine has made me so busy because you know what it is? I've decided this is my theory. Everybody else has been in the office except me. I work from home. My studio is at home. And now everybody is working from home. And in the office, you know, you get slack in the office. People come by. I do this when I go to Atlanta. I never get to see my boss. And I like my, I had a fantastic boss who I dearly love, who just retired, and his replacement is just as great. And I love just hanging out with the guy and talking. And so I go by and there'll be somebody in his office and I'll go in and I'll chat with him. And so I go to the office and I'm not super productive in the office. It's more connection time. It's FaceTime. It's enjoying being with people who I rarely get to actually see all the time. And when I'm home, I'm working. I'm steady work. 5 hours of radio a day. I've got 4 hours in between to eat, go to the gym, and right now do all the stuff I need to do because my wife can't leave the house and the kids are too young to drive. So I'm doing all that. I'm busy. And what I've decided is that people who are in the office and they hang out in the office and they visit in the office, they're home now and they got nobody to chat with. Well, Erickson works from home. He must be as unproductive as the rest of us. And they all call and text. I mean, yesterday, texting with yesterday? One of the, a member of the state legislature here in Georgia. And he was texting me about something. I'd come up in a conversation. I had the text from him when I woke up. And somebody at his church knew that we know each other and asked for my cell phone. And he wasn't going to give it to the person. Just thought it was funny that the boldness of that person asking for my cell phone. And he said, it must be hard being you sometimes. I kid you not. I woke up yesterday. I wake up typically between 6 and 6:30 to start doing show prep for the show. And I had I think it was 19, 20 text messages from people. Most of them were all people on the West Coast, or one of them was in Hawaii and just completely oblivious to the time zone. But most of them were on the West Coast, and they were texting me about stuff overnight between like midnight and 3 a.m. I had these texts come in from different people over some stuff that had happened relating to a friend, and too many people have my cell phone, and they're all friends of mine. And that's the problem, is that if I change my cell phone number, they would also get the new cell phone. So I still get the text overnight. I've got a prominent friend suggested that I just get a new cell phone. So I keep my current number and I keep my current cell phone and I just add a new one to the plan. And I look at the old cell phone or my current number, so to speak. I look at what my current number is maybe once a day and respond to people who have texted and otherwise don't give out that number. And I'm thinking I probably need to be in that situation where I do something like that because, man, the number of people who have my cell phone is starting to get a little crazy. And it's the people who give it to the people who I don't know who's given out my cell phone number. But I'm sure none of you wanted to hear this, but here I am doing it. I got other stuff to talk about, including meat. That's right. We need to talk about the meat. Where's the beef? It is not at your local grocery store or Wendy's. Did you know a number of Wendy's they're having beef shortages having to do with their supply chain, and we're running out of meat in different places. Now, where did I put this? Did I put it in my Slack account? The Kroger CEO was on CNBC, and man, the CNBC did such a terrible job of relating this story to people. The Kroger CEO, here's the headline. Customers will have meat during the coronavirus pandemic so long as they are flexible. That's what the Kroger CEO said in his interview with CNBC. And nothing he said, mind you, was wrong on this. Why are you loading an ad? Nothing that the Kroger CEO said was wrong. But it was portrayed as, here's his more precise quote, "Customers may not find the meat they want, but will find something to buy if they're flexible on eating between chicken, pork, and beef." And the way this was blown out, let's see, here is the CEO. Let me see if I can route the audio here. I'm doing this on the fly because I forgot that I had the audio.
You with the White House, you were involved in this joint effort with some of your competitors to try to bring more testing to this country, which is so desperately needed to reopen the economy. Where are you on this? How are you providing more tests?
We continue to ramp it up. At the White House event, we were in 6 states testing. We're ramping it up to 12 states where we're testing. And one other thing that we announced this week is associates that are eligible going through the CDC guidelines on our own employees, we provide testing as well. And we think it's part of something really important. And obviously, when somebody is a COVID-19 positive, you want them to quarantine.
But just for the broader population, are you opening these testing sites at Kroger stores across the country?
We partnership with Microsoft in creating a bot that uses the CDC guidelines in terms of whether you're eligible for the test or not. The tests are free, and we partner with local state governments and local and state both in terms of the drive-through facilities. And what we're typically doing is being able to use school space or fairgrounds, space that's conducive for easy drive-through.
That's remarkable. I don't want to play the entire 6 minutes of this, but it's remarkable what Kroger is stepping up and doing. You know, I'm a diehard Publix fan. somebody who listens to this program who is not in a state where Publix is actually emailed me last week. They had to go check on their elderly relatives in South Carolina. And there was a Publix, and they had to go to the Publix to get the groceries for their elderly parents who have been isolated. And they said, man, I see why you like your Publix. But I got tremendous respect for Kroger. So Rodney McMullen, he's expanding testing. Kroger is going to handle COVID-19 testing in select parts of the country where they exist, which is fantastic. But they go on in this interview, and I thought I had that clip pulled up, but I didn't. But he says, let me read you the quote. "If you're flexible on eating between chicken, pork, and beef, we constantly have one of those items or two of those, and usually three. We're working with all of our meat suppliers, figuring out how to get products that were diverted to restaurants before to get diverted to our stores. We're working with new suppliers, and it's one of those things where on a daily basis, our teams are working 24/7 finding products and getting it in there for our customers. They're working also with local farms. So we've got a number of farms here in Middle Georgia, like Rocking Chair Ranch and others, the grass-fed beef and stuff that have, they've supplied local restaurants and all. You can get boxes from them as well. Kroger's reaching out to these local farms around, and they're trying to source beef from them. Many of them have people who butcher on site at the farms as opposed to going to the big warehouses, and Kroger's trying to do this. So here's the problem, though. This is why I find this whole thing so funny. This Kroger CEO is on CNBC, and he says this stuff. One of the things where we're working with new suppliers. That's what he didn't say new farms. That's what he meant. And if you saw the full conversation, you would know that's what he meant. They're going out and they're working with small farmers who have farms. And this turned into a thing. Oh my God, they're going to serve us fake meat. Our beef could be horse. The peak sludge is coming back. People were freaked out by this because they saw it on social media and they didn't click through. This is probably one of the worst things to happen in the 21st century now, is that people read the headline and they don't actually read the story. It's so easy now on social media where you get the excerpt on social media and no one actually clicks through to see what's there or not. And the whole thing just got blown out of proportion. And all Kroger's doing is being responsible for their customers. But the main point is if you're flexible on eating And that's how CNBC headlined this. So long as, this is the headline again, Kroger CEO, customers will have meat during the coronavirus pandemic so long as they are flexible. Yeah, some people bend over quite a bit to There are jokes that write themselves that are inappropriate for my mind or radio. Shame on me. I repent. but I'm not going to say that. Oh, man, I'm about to get myself in trouble. Okay, I got to move on. So people heard this so long as they're flexible, and they thought that maybe they're going to introduce new meat products, the Beyond Burger, the Impossible Burger, that's going to become the standard, and this is our way of getting people to become vegetarian. No, what he meant is that when you go to the grocery store to go shopping, next week when my RecTech grill finally comes in and I go to the grocery store, I may not be able to find ground chuck, but I may be able to find a pork loin. I may be able to find a chicken if I can't find the pork. I may be able to find a brisket if I can't find the roast. They will have meat. They will have beef. They will have pork. They will have chicken. They will even have turkey. They just will not guarantee that they have exactly what you're going to go in there and look. I went the other day and I found lean ground beef. And I couldn't find ground chuck. Now, lately, I've been finding the market beef, which I don't get. It's got too much grit in it sometimes, and it's too fatty for me. We're ground chuck, but my wife has gotten, she's been going to the gym. She's been eating better. She's been getting lean ground beef, and lean ground beef is too dry for hamburgers. But here's the thing. If you do a panade where you soak a piece of bread and in milk, or you add an egg to it, it gives you extra protein and fat, and you can get a good juicy burger by doing that, even if you can't find your ground chuck. You just got to be flexible with that stuff. If you have to get the lean ground beef, just add an egg to it. Seriously, add an egg to it. And if you can't find beef, well, there will be chicken. If you can't find chicken, maybe there will be pork. But the idea that they're going to start introducing horse meat to the American diet, or the, I mean, people went crazy about this. About this conversation, and they didn't actually bother to listen to the conversation. People are nuts. Okay, let me give you the audit trail update real quick before I go any further. Just so you know where we are in the state, 31,150 total cases. I really do feel compelled to reiterate now on a daily basis that these are not the total current cases. Most Georgians have recovered from COVID-19. To beat a dead horse that's not going to wind up at your local grocery store. The reason you're not hearing about recoveries in most of the states, some of the states you are, but not here, it's because they're focused on getting people tested who may have the virus, and to clear a person and report them as recovered, you got to give them a test. And there's just not enough testing capacity. Now, where are we in the state right now? We are down to yesterday, 36 cases. I want to go, though, let me go to May 1st, because this is, I continue to be interested in May 1st. May 1st is my metric for, I'm jotting a note here just so I have this. May 1st is my metric to try to educate you on how the data comes in. Believe it or not, the state of Georgia is being attacked by some academic scientists for giving you too much information. You know, I myself have said that I have a little bit of concern that there's so much information out there that it allows people to nitpick it to death, and we're not necessarily getting accurate pictures. And the state of Georgia has defaulted to giving you more information than you potentially need. The May 1st number, I think, is a good one to try to understand what the state is doing. On May 2nd, when I looked at May 1st there were only about a dozen cases. And then by May 2nd, there were about 30 cases. On May 4th at 9 a.m., it was 128. By the end of the day on May 4th, they were up to 158. The next morning, 179. By the end of the day, they were at 214. Yesterday morning, there were 430 cases for May 1st. And today, there's 485 cases for May 1st. April 30th went up to 514. The 27th of April has gone up to 868. So you still got a good trend from April 27th. You had 868 cases to May 1st. You have 485 cases, and it'll probably hold steady there now. And we'll start seeing the second at 189 and the third at 137 and the fourth at 296. They'll start going up. One of the things we also see is you can fairly well plot out what days the weekend are because you see these distinct drops, these significant drops, and those are the weekend days. But what the state is doing is in real time, as they get the testing results in, they continue to update their website. Now, some of that is delayed because some of that is local entities doing the testing, delaying sending the results. And that's why May 1st isn't fairly steady. It is slowly but surely over time updating the results. And what you still see consistently is Georgia has flattened the curve and we're on the decline. There are academics who are upset with Georgia providing you all of this information because they think Georgia is either providing you false hope or they are allowing the conspiracy theorists to get the better of you. And that's not true. Consider the RT rate, the rate of transmission. R0 is actually what it is. R0. If it's above one, then the virus spreads. The higher above one it goes, the more it spreads exponentially. The lower or below one, the faster it clears out. Yesterday, Georgia had been at 0.81. Today, Georgia's at 0.78. The trend lines are all in the right direction. I got to tell you, in all honesty, the data is with the governor. And when we come back, I want to talk about my friend Bethany Mandel. She was a trending subject on Twitter because she said basically that she and her kids, they're going outside now. They're done. They're done with the lockup. They're going outside. And literally, people were referring to her as grandma killer and granny killer. She was a trending subject on Twitter. Soledad O'Brien came after her. You know Soledad O'Brien, who used to be on CNN. Came after her, calling her granny killer, and others out there attacking her for saying they're going outside. They're tired of staying inside. She's a homeschool mom. Her husband works, and they're ready to go outside. And she's being vilified by the left for daring to say that, as if she's going to kill grandma. And here's the thing. I've concluded this. Much of the moral indignation over ending the lockups now, over allowing people to go back now that we flattened the curve, all the goalposts moving, there is some of it that is an element of if the economy rebounds, it could help the president, so we need to stay keep people home so the economy doesn't rebound. But I think that's the minority. I think the majority of the people who are still intent on keeping everyone at home, even though we flattened the curve, are people who are scared, and they don't want to admit they're scared. And so they hide their fear behind moral indignation and outrage. I think that's what we're seeing right now.
Want to be on the show? Call Eric now at 877-97-ERIC. That's 877-973-7425.
All right, I need to address this now. Let me just go on and nip this in the bud because I'm kind of shocked by the number of people who have been sending me this video overnight of the woman, Judy, what's her name, the doctor, the AIDS researcher, who is discrediting Anthony Fauci. I've had family members send me this. Have you seen it? I've had readers and listeners send it to me. And have you seen it? Yes, unfortunately. I know this woman all too well. The woman who is being interviewed in this video was one of the leading AIDS researchers in America, and I don't know if she lost her mind or what, but she was arrested for stealing research, was fired. They wound up not prosecuting her. She went underground and came resurfaced as one of the world's authorities on anti-vaccine stuff. She's a big anti-vaxxer, has spread all sorts of, just done all sorts of damage to the way people think about vaccines. She is not a credible source. She does not like Fauci because Fauci, of course, has pushed back on the anti-vaccine stuff that she herself has pushed. And now I'm seeing people peddle this theory that Anthony Fauci is going to get rich off the COVID-19 stuff. That's not true, and you need to understand this. The way patent law works in the United States, institutions don't get patents. Patents are awarded to individuals. So, for example, when Steve Jobs was alive at Apple, you go look through the patent bureau and you'll find tons and tons of patents that have Steve Jobs' name on them. Ultimately, a lot of companies put individuals' names on patents as a way to retain those individuals. Those individuals are given all sorts of applause and credit for being on the patent of some unique device. Well, Anthony Fauci is on all sorts of patents because he is the head of the National Institutes of Allergy and Asthma, or whatever the title is. And they've engaged in a series of health research studies over the years that have gotten patents awarded to the federal government. Well, the federal government and the NIH and the like, they can't take a patent. It's got to be under someone's name. And so he, being the head of the organization, it's under his name, but by law, he can't profit off those patents. He is well compensated he's one of the highest paid civil servants in the United States, in large part because the federal government knows they need to pay him well to keep him from going into the private sector because he's that good. And he cannot profit off the patents. It is misleading for people to say that. I'm actually shocked at how this stuff circulates. And by the number of friends of mine who know me and who they're like, is this real? The woman is, you need to research who this woman is. She is one of the most harmful people in the medical scientific community in America today for the way she has poisoned people's minds towards vaccines. And she really has is nursing a grudge against those who have kind of exposed the kookery out there. I mean, she was arrested for stealing people's research or some such at her office before she was fired. She used to be a brilliant, I don't know what happened to her. I have no idea. But there's something not right there. The moral of the story here is the reason people are treating this credibly is because it had a cinematic quality to it. It looked credible. It didn't look like a fringy video. You know the aliens guy on the History Channel? If they filmed him with a cinematic quality with a red camera and the color coding and all of that, he would be like the philosopher king of planet Earth with the aliens. It turns out the aliens seem to be real, according to the New York Times. But you give somebody a cinematic quality and make it look credible, and suddenly people are willing to buy the fringe and the kooks as opposed to the typical nonsense. Good gracious.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.